Good morning. Before we move on to the next sugya of Prikun Teina, I'd just like to spend a few moments and wrap up some loose ends from last week's shiur. As we discussed, that when a person, there's a kinyan kesef, when a person pays for something, for an item, even a partial payment, even a shava pruta, he can be in kinyan on the entire item. Now, if a person buys something, makes a partial payment, and there's seller financing, the seller says, okay, here, take the item, and he makes a payment plan. You'll pay me, they write a promissory note, you pay me up over time. So in that case, once the kinyan is done, once the partial payment is made, it's over. The kinyan is complete. And even if the buyer defaults on the financing, so it's like any other debtor that doesn't pay back his chayv. And it would seem, at least the simple halacha would seem to be, is that if he doesn't pay, the seller can sue him like any other creditor. He cannot undo this transaction because the kinyan was finalized, it was done, the money became a choiv, and there's no backseas. There's no way to reverse this transaction. Now that is the most extreme case where you make a kinyan, and it's zakvanov b'milva, the seller says, I'm financing, it's a debt, it's an IOU note, so the transaction's over, whatever happens afterwards is just a regular debt. On the other hand, if they don't speak this out so clearly, you make a partial payment, you perhaps take possession of the item, and then you don't make the rest of the payments, this creates a problem. On one hand, it's self-evident, the only reason why the seller is selling the item is he needs the money. Why else is he selling it? He has the item, you have the money, and he's that's why he's giving it to you. On the other hand, there was no, in the absence of a formal tanai, if you do, at the time of the sale, if you make a tanai, you say, I'm giving it to you, al manas, you pay me by January 1st, there's a tanai. Every tanai, if you mevatel a tanai, the maisa is batel, the deal is undone. Here that never happened. You didn't specifically say you must pay at this time, and if not, the deal is off. You just gave it to him and said, "Okay, the payment is due. It's due tomorrow, or it's due at a specific date." And the question therefore becomes: if the person doesn't pay on time, it takes them a little bit longer. Does that undo the entire deal or not? So this is the sugya of Ayil v'Nafik Azuzi, and what we saw last week is there are two conditions. If number one, the seller made it clear, or it's obvious from the setup, that he was desperate, he needed the money, he needed it now. Or even in a case where he set a payment date a week or two in the future, it's because he knew he has a mortgage payment to make, he needs the money, so he's selling it to you with the expectation that you're going to pay him by the due date. So if number one, there's a gilui das, it's clear that the seller needs the money now. And number two, it's ayil v'nafik azuzi. And the due date, the seller comes and tries to collect the money. The buyer drays him a cup, I'm busy, come back later. The seller comes back a second time. Okay, I need the money. In that case, if the buyer still is draying him a cup, we say the deal is off. Because I died at the hachi, the seller would not have gone into it. And therefore, the seller can say, okay, if you're not giving me the rest of the money, I'm going to sell the remainder of the field to someone else, and I'm no longer meshubit to follow through with the rest of the deal because you're not doing your end, you're not paying me in the date that I needed it. Now, although this seems to be a pretty straightforward halacha, the actual lemaisa in carrying this out is a little bit more complicated. Because although it's clear that if there's a partial, you paid for half of it. The second half, once it's ayil v'nafik azuzi, once the buyer is not filling his part of the deal, the seller can say, I'm no longer locked in, I'm not interested in finishing the transaction. That's on the second part of the deal, the part that you didn't pay for. As far as undoing the transaction for the money that you already received, that already is not so simple. Although technically either party has the right to do it, to say, once we're not going through the whole deal, then let's just forget about the whole thing. However, the halacha is yada al tachtayna. Whoever wants to undo the part that was already paid for, it's yada al tachtayna. So ultimately, different shitas exactly how to calculate the yada al tachtayna. But the bottom line is, you'll never be able to force the other party to give you back your money or give you back the property if you don't want to go through with it. Now, There are a couple of exceptions to this halacha. If the property that's being sold, the seller had a swamp, it was wetlands, it's mocher sodei b'nei rasei, he was trying to get rid of the property, it was a bad field. So in that case, when comes the due date and the seller is desperate, coming, give you the money, comes back again, give you the money, there the seller does not have the right to undo the deal. Why? Because the whole story here is there was a mecca. The sale was done, the kinyan was made. Why can you back out? You can back out because when we see, if we know the seller needed the money, and we see he's coming back and again on the due date, desperate for the money, vice ois, that it was adaited to hachi, and if you're not paying him when he's supposed to be paid, he can undo the deal. Gemara says, but when the seller unloaded a swamp, you want to know why he's coming, he's desperate for the money, he's constantly knocking on your door? Because he's scared stiff. You're going to realize what kind of field you bought, you're going to change your mind, and he won't get paid. So in that case, we have no hechacha, we have no umdana. The reason why he's coming back and forth is because the whole deal was predicated on getting paid on this day. If I don't get him to this day, I want out. Adarabba. The reason why he's being so aggressive is that he's afraid the buyer will change his mind, and that's why he's pushing, and therefore we cannot undo the deal simply because the seller tried twice to collect his money. Now, a similar halacha is, if a person is selling his house, he's moving out of town. So there too as well, if he's pushing the buyer to get paid right away, that doesn't prove to us it's because he's desperate, he needs the money today, and otherwise the whole deal's off. The reason why he's collecting is he doesn't want the buyer to change his mind. The buyer backs out, you already have your moving truck, you already have your tickets, you're moving out of town, so you want to make sure, you're afraid the buyer will back out. That's why you're pushing for the money. Not necessarily because there's a tanai, and therefore we cannot be mevatel the mekach, that with a clear kinyan that was done, because there's another very plausible option that you're pushing simply because you want to get the money quickly, you don't want the buyer to change his mind, and therefore you cannot be chayzer. Now there's a third case, which is actually a machlokes. What happens if a person sells a field, it's worth $100,000, and you manage to sell it for $200,000? You get a very high price. Then you're ayel v'nafek azuzi. Then when the due date, you're going ahead, you're coming back and forth, pushing the buyer for the money. So here the Gemara is unsure. Is this like mocher sadeh p'nei rasei or not? Now on one hand you can say, we see this is a regular good field. We see the seller is desperate, he's pushing, he's coming back again and again for the money. If he doesn't get it, the deal's off. On the other hand, there's another explanation. Perhaps because he knows he ripped off the buyer, he got such a premium, he's concerned the buyer will get wiser, he'll change his mind. And that's why he's coming back and forth to try to get the money as soon as possible, not because he wants to back out of the deal, adarabba. This is a great deal for him. He has no interest in releasing the buyer, or he has no interest in walking away from the deal. He's pushing only because it was such a good deal, he wants to get paid immediately before the buyer changes his mind. Therefore, the Gemara says in this case that it's a suffik, and misafik, you cannot be mevatel the mecher. Now, that being said, if the seller is toifus, if the seller manages to grab the money, or again, the achrayim talk about different cases, how he could be toifus, but if he's toifus and he's the mochzik, then he will prevail. And the reason for that is although normally tefisa will not help in such a case, nevertheless, because over here the seller is really a bari. The seller says, I'm the mochzik, I grabbed it, and I know my intention. When I sold it to you, you want to know why I was banging down your door? It wasn't because I was desperate for the money, it's because I didn't want you to back out. Since he's a bari, even though it's an iboy de la yifshita, even though the Gemara does not have a hachlota, that means as halacha, the bezin wants to look at the case and make a hachlota what was going on in their minds, we have a sveka dedina. But if the meicher says, I'm toifus and I am a bari, I had no intention of undoing the deal, I was just pushing because I wanted to make sure the buyer doesn't undo it, in that case, tefisa will help and he will prevail. Now, one other important hosafa that the nesivas makes is that the nesivas says all of these conditions that you need, that number one, you need a gilui das. The seller had to have made it clear at the time of the deal that he needed the money right away. And number two, you have to come back twice, and it has to be on that day. This whole Isle of Enoughic is the due, on the due date or before you come back, and you come back again, I need the money, I need the money. On the other hand, if the due date comes and goes, and 2 or 3 days later, you're desperately chasing him, it's too late. You don't have this umdenor, you don't have this Isle of Enoughic Azuzi, and you're stuck with the transaction. Zokni Nesivus, this is only in a case where the buyer is draying you a cup. You come to him for the money, he says, okay, yeah, I have it, you know what, I'm busy now, come back in an hour. You come back a second time, he says, oh, I'm sorry, I just got an emergency phone call, you have to come back in the morning. So in that case, that we have to look at the sugya of Isle of Enoughic Azuzi. However, Zokni Nesivus, and there are different ways, there are different pshatim in the Nesivus, but just putting them together. In a case where the buyer says, when the seller comes and says, okay, the money is due, the buyer says, I'm so sorry, I don't have any money for you today. Having a cash flow issue, Mirtz Hashem, I'm working on a deal. Zok the Nesivus, in that case, even without the sugya of Isle of Enoughic Azuzi, the deal is off. Because when you're buying something and the person's draining you a little bit, come back tomorrow, I'm busy, this. Good. So the unfortunate reality is whenever you sell something on credit, collections are not always so easy. So the fact that he's being a little bit difficult, good, that we have to look at the sugya of Isle of Enoughic Azuzi before you can go ahead and undo the entire transaction. However, if the person is broke, he doesn't have the money. He says, I'm sorry, I don't have it. I hope tomorrow, next week, money will be coming, something will come through. Siva says there's an umzino demuchach, a seller is not interested in going down this route, trying to collect money from someone who simply doesn't have it, and therefore the Nesiva says in that case, the seller says, that's it, the deal is off, he has the right to be mevatel mecher even without the tanoim, even without the conditions of Isle of Enoughic Azuzi. So this is a tremendous chiddush of the Nesivus, because it really the whole sugya of Isle of Enoughic Azuzi really goes out the window to a certain degree, because in most cases when the buyer is not just draying, he just doesn't have the money, or he says, I'm not paying you today, I'm not paying, you know, come back to me in a week, come back to me in a month. So according to the Nesivus, you can be mevatlet and you can undo the entire deal. You're not stuck partially with the part that he paid for. You can undo the entire deal, because Adaita Dehachi, he never went into this transaction. And the Nachal Yitzchak argues, he says, you can't really make such an umdunah. While it's true a seller does not want to have to chase a buyer, the unfortunate reality is when you sell things on credit, that does happen. Many buyers will buy things with the expectation, okay, in 30 days, by the time the money is there, hopefully my cash flow will be better, the money will come in later. And he says, it's lav dafka, an umdunah, if you want to be mevatel, you have to make it tonight. Is that the Nachal Yitzchak argues, but the Shita of the Nesivus is that no. If you don't have money, the seller can say deals off. So this is the Shita of the Nesivus. Now, actually, to address your point, there's a famous Shita of the Bach, and this is unfortunately a very common issue. Very often a business will go under. Now, what does a business typically do just shortly before it goes under? Buys a lot of merchandise on credit. Takes the merchandise, sells it very often at a fire sale, pennies on the dollar, and takes the proceeds, either puts it in their pocket, or to pay off, they have a cousin, they have a brother-in-law they owe money to pay off their chayvus. And the question is, how do you deal with such a situation? Now, it goes without saying that to do that is a tremendous avod. If a person runs a business, and business is struggling, and at some point it goes under, okay, so if it's an oinus, unfortunately, people even, they do their hishtadlus, they try to run a business, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Oinus rachmanu patre, if you end up, you can't pay back your chayvus, okay, you're an oinus, what can you do? Mashayin kein, if a person is running the business, he already sees it's poiches v'hoilich, and he knows good and well the end is near, and he buys merchandise knowing that he's not going to be able to pay for it, that's poshet gezel or oishik, it's a tremendous avla. So it goes without saying it's usher to do. But the question that comes up is, what do you do after the fact? The person bought merchandise, he never paid for it, and now he went bankrupt. So he ends up with a list of dozens and dozens of creditors. He owes hundreds or thousands of dollars or millions of dollars. And the inventory is really only worth pennies on the dollar. How do we divide the inventory? Now, normally, if a person owes 10 creditors money, he owes, let's say, $1 million. He has $100,000 worth of assets. So you divide it. So it's a machlokes in Siman Kuf Dalet. How to divide it, whether it's proportional to the amount of debt that you have. Perhaps each Baal Choyv gets the same amount. Again, machlokes Rishayim over there. That's a separate sugya. But everyone has an equal claim. You divide it among themselves. What happens if the fellow goes bankrupt? He's got $1 million of debt, $100,000 of inventory left in his warehouse. But one of the creditors comes in and says, listen, I recognize these goods. They came from me. And he still owes me money for it. I should have kedima. I should be able to take back the merchandise that I delivered. Now, whatever's there, whatever's left over, that you can divide among the creditors. So what's the halacha? Do we say there's $100,000, let's divide it among all the creditors? Or do we say no? Since it was bought from me, this creditor has kedima, he has the right to say, I'm going to take these in the chasim back. So the Bach in Simen Tzadivav says, he says a chiddush. He says the creditor, the moicher, the person who sold the goods, has kedima. When the fellow goes bust, he can, the moicher, who if anyone recognizes and can prove they provided these goods, he gets it back. Not only that, Zok the Bach, not only does he have kedima on the goods that he sold, if the merchant bought the goods, sold them, and he still has that cash, the original supplier has a priority claim on that cash. Since it's ba mikoyach your nechasim, you have the right to seize these nechasim back. So this is the shita of the Bach. Now, in practice, how to prove, you know, money is fungible, how to prove what money came from which merchandise, if it all got deposited into a bank account and is a loan, is a nightmare. It's probably not possible. Figure out whose money is whose and what came out. But at least in theory, if it was sold in cash and you're still sitting there in his vault, you find the cash that was paid for these items, the Bach says the creditor, the supplier, has kedima. It doesn't go into the pot to be divided among all of the creditors. Now the Tzemach Tzedek argues on the Bach. He says, Me'ikar Hadin, there's no such halacha. Certainly not this idea that the tmura, the money that came from the item, he says, Me'ikar Hadin, there will be no such schus that the tmura of the if the debtor sold the item, the proceeds are not meshubid to this particular supplier. It gets put in the pot, it gets divided among everyone else. When it comes to the action, if the item is still be'en, there the Tzemach Tzedek has a little bit of a pshara. Me'ikar Hadin, he says, once you bought it, it's yours. And really, the creditor, the moicher, should get on line with all the other creditors. It should be divided equally. However, he says, there was a takono dalet arotzos. There was a takono they made in the dalet arotzos in order to protect commerce, in order to protect suppliers, to stop people who are on their way down from just buying things and not paying for it. A special takono was made where the moicher will have kedima. But it's a takana only. It is not Me'ikar Hadin. Now the Chasam Sofer limits this, takes it a step further. He says the takana was only made to stop people from gaming the system. It was made to stop people who know they're on their way down, just going ahead and buying merchandise, knowing that where they won't be able to pay for it, and that way, and you'll end up with this moicher having a problem. However, Zok the Chasam Sofer, if it was no malicious intent, what happened, things were done in good faith. A person had a business, he bought things and then he died. So in that case, now the Yerushim want to know what to do with it. There was no malicious intent, there was no intent to do any Avera. There the Chasam Sofer says there's no Takana, and in that case, even in the Dalet Arotzos, he says, then there would be no Kedima whatsoever. With difficulty. Okay, you know, you'll have to look at each case, and some cases are not going to be unclear. It is a takana. The general rule is, when there's a suffix takana, you go back to the Ikar Hadin. So unless it's clear, according to Chasam Sofer, that you had this malicious intent, that the person knew good and well he wasn't making everyone whole, in the absence of clarity, when there's a suffix, you go back to the Ikar Hadin, which according to the Tzemach Tzedek and the Chasam Sofer are, everyone goes into the pot, and all the creditors have an equal claim. So the Chasam Sofer says not. Chasam Sofer says, first of all, even the takana there, he says, the rule was, he said specifically, if you look at the takana, it was only when both parties lived in the Dalet Arotzos. However, if one person was a local and he borrowed money or bought merchandise, he imported it from China, from someplace out of the Dalet Arotzos, he says very specifically that even then you were not subject to the rules. And Kol Shekein today, where I'm not sure exactly which Adalat Aratis were, I don't know my history well, but the United States is certainly not was not one of the four. Now, again, this is a machlokes. Most Achroinim seem to say either Mekar Adin or Mikoyech Takana, there was the practice was to follow these guidelines. Others argue and say there was no such Takana. In truth, based on what we've just learned today, the whole discussion is somewhat limited. Because in a case where you bought something, and then and when it comes time to pay, the seller says, I have no money, forget about the Takana. Then according to the Nesivos, what happens? Even without the conditions of Ayal V'Nafek Azuzah, the whole deal is off. If the whole deal is off, it's a Dover Pashut. The creditor, the seller, gets back his item, and there's nothing to talk about. The whole discussion is only Negeya, really, in a case of Zaklan Rav B'Milva, where he specifically said it was seller financing, where there the Nesivos doesn't apply, then you have this conversation of they did make a Takana, they didn't make a Takana. But in Stam, when you sold it without a formal Zaklan Rav B'Milva and you don't pay for it, according to the Nesivos, the deal gets undone, and L'Kulei Amo, the seller, the supplier, would be able to take back his merchandise. In contrast, if the merchandise was sold, and it's a question of going after the proceeds, that in halacha it's going to be very hard to do. Generally not. Generally not, because he was entitled to sell it. Now, the one case where you might have that taina, and this is the Pri Chadash says like this. Pri Chadash doesn't like this concept in general, that if you buy something, then business goes bad and you default, you don't have the right, he says, you don't have the right to go ahead, the supplier doesn't have any exclusive. However, the Pri Chadash says, in a case where at the time you bought it, you had no intention of paying for it, this was a fraud from day one, there he says, everyone would agree in that kind of case that the deal is bottom. So in that case, if you bought it as a fraud with no intention of paying and you sold it, it would probably have a din of gezel. If you sell stolen goods, the nigzel has the right to go to the buyer, as long as there wasn't a yish and shin rishos, and say, give it back to me. Now, there is a takonis hashok. In order to protect commerce, when you go to the victim, assuming he had no idea about the background, he didn't know these were stolen goods, on one hand, he has to return it to the nigzel, but the nigzel has to reimburse him whatever he laid out for it. So in a case where the person buys it, he has no intention of paying, so it's a fraud, it's like gezel according to the Pri Chadash, and he sells it, if he sells it for full value, then the suppliers are up the creek. Because he might have the technical right to ask for it back, but he has to reimburse the buyer what he paid for it, so you know he doesn't gain anything. On the other hand, if the person bought the goods knowing he was going under, and he fire sailed it at 50 cents on the dollar, so now the seller would be able to go back to the ultimate buyer and say, listen, you bought stolen goods. I'm not blaming you. You had no idea they were stolen. Takanas Ashok. I have to pay you I have to reimburse you for what you laid out, but once I'm willing to pay you what you laid out, you have to give me back the item, even though you thought you got a great deal. Now, I actually recently had a case, you know, the case itself was a little bit, but essentially there was two people who worked for a locksmith. They both ended up leaving. They both went into business on their own. And they both happened to have bought machinery from their old boss. Their old boss is an older person. He was retiring. They both ended up buying machinery. Now, one of them paid for his machine. The other one didn't. Now, the one that paid for his machine, at some point, his machine broke. He sent it in. It was under warranty. He sent it in to get fixed. While it was being fixed, he went to his friend and said, listen, you know, you have that machine also. Can I borrow it for a little bit? Said, fine. So he borrowed the machine from his friend. Now, as his mazel had it, after the machine was fixed, the manufacturer on their records still had that the owner was the original person that sold it. So they shipped back the fixed merchandise, the fixed machine, to the original seller. Now the seller gets the machine. And the seller is a little bit of a difficult character. And he says, listen. Your friend never paid for the machine that he bought from me. Now, I know this machine was paid for. But I'm not giving this back to you until your chaver goes ahead and pays me what he owes me on the first machine. Now, al pi din, like what he wants. What do you want from me? Go after him. Don't go after me. But the seller wasn't listening to Bezdin. He wasn't going to do anything. So the person who had paid for the machine now had an interesting question. He's stuck. His machine that he paid for is being seized by the seller as ransom for his friend to pay for his machine. He right now is holding on to his friend's machine. Does he have the right to keep this machine or hold on to it until his friend pays for it? Oh, it's like this. So what was the question? We discussed way back, I don't want to get into the details, there's a whole discussion about seizing a mashkin. You're not allowed to go into someone's house and grab a mashkin. What happens if he gives you a pikadon to hold on to? Can you take it as a mashkin? So there's a whole zohar, if you owe someone money and then if you owe someone money and then you have, and then he gives you a mashkin, even though if he didn't, technically you should be able to hold on to it because you're not seizing it. Nevertheless, the zohar writes you shouldn't do it. We have plenty of chayavos on the Rabbanim Shloim. Nevertheless, every night we give our neshama as a mashkin to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So if we start seizing a pikadon for old debt, we're in big trouble. So the zohar says not to do it. So his question was, that was his question. Because there's a chayv over here, it was given as a pikadon, can you hold on to it as a mashkin? So he had a shayla of the zohar, he had a shayla of it, can you seize as a mashkin, so kli umnis, something that the person needs for his parnasa. He had a third shayla of, can you grab a mashkin for a third party? Can we be, you know, it's one thing if you owe me money and I want to grab a mashkin. Here, I'm grabbing a mashkin for a debt that you'll have to someone else. I'm doing it because he has ransom. He had all sorts of interesting shilas. L'maisa, I think the way to avoid all of the shilas over here is perhaps the nesivas that we just discussed. Because if this person, when he bought the machine, never paid for it, and when the seller says, okay, where's the money? He says, I'm sorry, I can't afford it. I'm broke. I don't have the money to pay you for it. According to the receivers, what happens? The whole deal's off. The whole deal's off. The machine now belongs to the seller. And the buyer can keep his money because the deal is off. So in that case, this other person has every right to go to the seller and say, I'll tell you what, let's make a swap. You take the machine back because it really belongs to you. According to the receivers, it really belongs to you. Give me back mine. And Shalom Yisrael, everyone will be happy. So because in this case, the buyer wasn't just saying, come back in a few hours. He was saying, I don't have the money. So according to the sheet of the nesivas, the whole deal is off. So therefore, the item would belong to the seller and the whole deal would be undone. Again, it's a little bit, there are not necessarily this simple because the seller may not want to do that. The seller may prefer going after the full value of the money. He doesn't necessarily have to undo the deal. He perhaps can say, I have enough of Zizi, I'm not desperate. And the other issue is, in this case, it may have been a Zaklon of Bimova, where it was a formal case of seller financing. So again, in the particular case, it was more complicated. But this is an example of where this Nesivas comes up, halacha l'maisa. Two other quick halachas before we wrap up this sugya. If a person makes a kinyan kesef, but he uses stolen money to do it. So in that case, l'chayr the kinyan should not work. Because the money isn't yours to give to someone else. Kinyan kesef is when you pay for an item or make a partial payment. If it's stolen money and the nigzal has a claim to that money, there the kinyan should not be effective. The Sham Mishpat actually has a chiddush. He says it depends whether the seller knows that it's stolen money. Why? He says if the seller knows you're giving him stolen money, you know, you rob a bank and afterwards you buy something, you're paying for it with stolen goods, so then he knows it's not his. He knows the nigzal has a claim for it. You can't make kinyan kesef with someone else's money. It's not his. The seller has no right to keep it. He never received any payment, and therefore the kinyan will not be chal. However, if the seller has no idea about the history, the seller, as far as the seller is concerned, this is you're paying with your own money. Now you come and you prove it. Someone, the nigzal comes and proves that this was stolen money that it was used to pay for it. There he says it's a takonas hashuk. Since the seller, in exchange for this money, gave over an item, he sold goods, so the takanos hashuk is, you don't have the nigzal does not have a claim, cannot demand the item back, or if he does, he has to reimburse the seller. In that case, the seller got value. He got something from this transaction. So there the Shaar Mishpat says, the kinyan will be chal. Now, it was an interesting case. And one last case that was discussed in Siman Kuf Tzadi in Sevav, is a person paid for a property. He paid the money, and then when it came time to take possession, the seller said, not so fast. Why? we did business a couple of years ago. You never paid me. You have a chayv, you borrowed money from me, you owe me money. So when I sold you the property, it was really just a sham. I didn't really intend to sell you the property. This was a way to get you to give me the money. And now I'm taking this money as a piron chayv, I'm taking it to collect, to pay off the debt, and I'm not giving you the property. So here we find two halachas that the Sma points out seems to be a stira. In Siman Kuf Tzadi, the halacha is nothing doing. The seller has to deliver the real estate. If he can prove money is owed, so let him go after the, he can sue the buyer. If the buyer doesn't pay, he can collect this in his for his chayiv. He can't refuse to give over the item with the argument that it wasn't really a mekach, it was just to collect the money. However, in Siman Reish Dalet, when you buy merchandise, the same story. You pay for the merchandise. The seller says, I'm not delivering it because you owe me money. There the halacha is, it's a good taina. He doesn't have to deliver the merchandise. Zokta Sma, it's really not a stira. He says, in both cases, if you say, I'm selling something, the person pays for it, the deal is done. The buyer has the rights to the item. That's why in our halacha, you have to deliver the real estate. If he owes you money, you go at that point, you'll collect the real estate. You go to Beis Din, they'll do a shuma, maybe he'll pay you cash, maybe he'll pay you with this real estate, maybe something else, you go after it. Zokta Sma, that's in real estate where you have that option. Let him move on to the property. If you ever need it, you can foreclose on it. However, when you're dealing with metallotelin, if you're dealing with merchandise, you know good and well, the moment you deliver the merchandise to his warehouse, it's gone. He's going to go ahead and sell it, he'll hide it, you have no way of going after it. There, although it's his, or at least for a mishapara, you have the right to hold it as a mashkin, basically to be ma'akalit, until you go to Bezin and tell Bezin, listen, I'm holding on to the merchandise, he owes me money, I'm afraid if I deliver it, I'll never get paid. Bezin, take care of it, let me take the merchandise, sell it, be goyve the choyv somehow. So technically, this argument that I'm really, that when you make a sale, that I want to use the proceeds to collect the debt is a losing argument. By karka, you have to deliver it because there's no problem. Deliver it, fight about it later. Metaltalin, where there's a chashash that once you deliver it, you're never going to see it again, there you have the right to go to Beis Din and the right to ask Beis Din to be ma'akalit and settle the debt before you deliver whatever the balance of the merchandise is. Okay, so let's at least briefly begin the sugya of pre-kantina, at least do a haskalah. We all know there's a mitzvah of prika and a mitzvah of tina. The Torah tells us, Kisira, Chamor, Seinacha, Revetz, Tachas, Masoiv, Chadalta, Me'azoiv, Loi, Azoiv, Tazoiv, Imoi. If you chance upon your enemy's donkey, it's struggling under the weight, it's having a hard time, so there's a mitzvah saseh to go ahead and to help it out, to go ahead and help out with the load, adjust it to help out the donkey. We have another pasuk of Loisira Eschor Chamore Achicha Eshoyre Noifun Baderech. If the donkey or the shor actually already fell, the packages are all over the street, and now you have the owner sitting there. He's stuck. He has the packages. He needs help reloading the donkey. So the halacha over here is the halacha. There's both a loisa say Loisira v'salam tamehem. Don't just turn away, pretend you didn't see. But adrabah, hakim takim imoy, there's a mitzvah saseh to go ahead and to load up the donkey. So ignoring the donkey, we have a loy saseh, just driving right by, pretending you didn't see, is an iser loy saseh. And stopping and helping him out is a mitzvah saseh. Now, I'd venture to bet that none of you have ever chanced upon your enemy's donkey sitting, struggling under a load in the street. Hopefully, we don't have very many enemies. If we do have enemies, certainly doesn't have a donkey. And if he has a donkey, it's not going to be walking down Route 59 carrying a load. So it would seem this is an example of a mitzvah that is not so relevant today in our day-to-day life. But as we're going to see when going through this siman, although what's interesting, this siman, probably there's not one halacha in this sif that will ever come up in its actual form. However, every one of these halachas is critical for knowing our obligations of chesed, of dealing with other people. To just throw out two or three very common cases. One shaya would be, is you're not going to see your friend with a donkey struggling under a load. But what if you're cruising down the parkway on the way to Lakewood and you see someone stopped on the side of the road with a flat tire? Now, certainly it's a chesed to go ahead and stop for him, but is it just a chesed? Or is there a lav d'oraisa if you see someone stuck, stranded on the side of the road, unable to load his donkey? Perhaps a flat tire would be the same. Question number one. Another example is, perhaps you're walking down the street and you see the classic little old lady struggling to cross the street with her grocery bags. We all understand stopping would be the right thing to do with the mitzvah of chesed. But perhaps it's more than that. If when you see your enemy's donkey struggling under a load, there's an iser d'oraisa of continuing on and not helping, so is your neighbor's bubby worse than your enemy's donkey? Do we have the same chiyuv d'oraisa, or perhaps not? Perhaps this is a din, tzar ba'alei chayim, it's a din that applies to donkeys and to loads. Perhaps people are different. So this question and many others will, Emir Tashem, get to in the next year.